this
Try it.
application on
Right.
weather patterns and saying that we should be getting more sand accretion now. So you could have just waited a few months and the outfall pipe would have covered itself. Is basically what he was saying.
Now the chat's working.
I've got audio if you
Yeah,
want.
can you
Great.
hear
Thank you.
us? Yeah, we've got audio now.
Yes.
Okay, so there was no reportable action in closed session tonight.
Okay, great. Well, thank you everybody for your patience. Our next item is public comment. This portion of the agenda allows the public to speak to the board on the various issues not itemized on this agenda. A member of the public may also request that a matter appearing on the consent calendar be pulled and discussed separately. Pursuant to the Brown Act, the board may not take any action on any item that does not appear on the agenda. Each speaker is limited to speak for a period of 3 minutes regarding each item on the agenda when that comes up. Each speaker is limited to speak for a period of 3 minutes during public comment portion on the agenda regarding items of special interest to the public not appearing on the agenda that are in the subject matter jurisdiction of the Board of Commissioners. Does anyone here wish to make any public comment tonight? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to the consent calendar. A motion for the consent calendar.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to pull item C, consider approval of adoption of procurement policy off the consent calendar. Just discuss it for just a minute.
Sure, we can do that. So can I have a motion for items A and B then?
So moved. Second.
I have a motion and second to adopt items A and B on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Not all in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. So we pass items A and B. Item C.
Item C, I just had a question. It shouldn't take too long. It's looking at page 21 of 67 under sealed bids. It's the bottom of the page, 2.6. And it just says, you know, bids must be solicited from an adequate number of qualified sources. And that's where my question is. What's an adequate number? I know it's splitting here.
That would be receiving more than one bid. Perhaps typically we get a minimum of three bids.
Mm-hmm.
And certain acquisitions could require certain packages could acquire, or we could specify a certain number.
Right.
So the idea here is, as the staff report states, the procurement policy that we currently have is not compliant with the federal standard. And because we're working with federal grants now, we've had to adopt a little bit different policy. So typically the district would not accept a bid unless we had three bids. And if that isn't possible, then we can make the findings to accept a bid, but we would typically go to an engineer and get an estimate or get a confirmation that would be valid. We've had to do that in the past.
So federal formatting is asking us just to use words like adequate.
Yeah, this language was brought
to be quantitative.
Yeah, this language was brought forward and reviewed by K&L Gates, which is one of our outside councils, yeah. And our district council, Rand Platts. That's okay. Correct. But it is district policy to typically get three bids. As a minimum.
Thanks for clarifying.
No, great question.
I'm fine with that. I just wanted
to. I applaud your attention to details. Seriously.
So I'll make a motion to pass consider approval of adoption of procurement policy. And at this point, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? I guess since this item was pulled, goes to the public. Any public comment on our procurement policy? Please feel free to come to the podium and identify yourself if you'd like.
Hi, my name is Wendy Choate. And my question about your policy is that will it be available to the public for review?
Well, I guess it's...
review, but, you know, for the notion of knowing what our bidding process would be here in the district.
So it's... thank you. It's the policy that's in the packet right now, correct? So
correct.
The policy that we're voting on is in the packet.
I only have the agenda.
Oh, the agenda. Well, it'll be available from
yeah, so
staff, and it should be if we have packets around.
Yep. So to clarify, it is available on the district website, and we can upload specifically. But if you were to navigate to meetings and agendas and go to the April 11, 2024 meeting, it's part of the packet. Also, when bids go out, we will be following this policy in terms of how we commission the work. But when we do solicit bids, there's a full bid package will be put together as part of that process. So in the solicitation for bids, you will have availability to all the related documents, either in the package or by reference where they can be found.
So it may make it much like what the county does with the notice for bids in the newspaper publicly advertised.
Correct. Yep. Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you for your question.
All right. Thank you. There's no further public comment. I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed or abstaining? Hearing none, motion passes. All right, moving on to communications, reports, and correspondence received.
Need my PowerPoint.
Thank you, Amber.
Feel free to share so some people can see it. It's there, it's just behind. Yes, you have to do that. Yep.
Okay. Well, welcome everybody. Thank you for attending the meeting tonight. This is the executive director report. I'd like to appreciate Amber for pitch hitting tonight. It's not always easy when you're up to bat the first time. So a lot of respect, a lot of love for you tonight. Thank you, Amber. We're very grateful for you supporting us. So we've had an exciting time here at the district. We've been plenty busy. We recently had the privilege to host the California Select Committee on Goods Movement. So we had Assembly Member Mike Gibson. That is with a P. That's not a typo. Congressman Jared Huffman came and joined us, the governor's office representatives, lieutenant governor's office, secretary of the Department of Transportation sent delegates from his office, and tribal government, labor, education, CAPA, which is the California Association of Port Authorities, and a number of industry professionals. And we were able to spend a day together and really talk about what offshore wind looks like here in terms of what we would develop on an on-bay project, the heavy lift marine terminal, and what offshore wind looks like on the West Coast in the various ports and out in our oceans. So excellent opportunity. We want to offer a special thank you to Dr. Tom Jackson and Connie Stewart at Cal Poly Humboldt. They hosted us the night before and brought us together for a meal and a night of conversation. We're very grateful for their partnership. They've been great stewards of ours, and they've helped us in any way they can. The day prior, we toured Humboldt Bay with the Secretary of the Interior, the Acting Secretary of Labor. Again, Congressman Huffman was present, the Governor's Office, BOEM, Bureau of Offshore Energy Management, Labor and Education. And we were able to go about the bay and take a class for the day offered by Cal Poly Humboldt. We are students for the day. But again, come together to better understand not only the project, but what are some of the events that are happening in our community? What are some of the challenges? And what options might be out there for us to engage and give consideration? We have a chip barge inbound at the end of April at Green Diamond. You may have noticed there's a lot of scaffold up around the chip chute, and it's now sheeted, because they are doing a refinishing project, but they've done it in a manner which they can also be operable. So good news, we've got some more product coming out of here. And they're also working on a ship nomination for a full load of chips in May. So as we've been reporting very regularly now, we are having goods movement through our port. So very happy that that occurs. The U.S. Coast Guard is having a tabletop exercise for emergency preparedness, and they've invited all service agencies to be a part of it. And at the same time, they're hosting an expo here on Woodley Island. That's April 21st. They will have quite an expo from what we understand. And I think there'll be some aircraft here and the whole package. So bring your families. It's a family-friendly event. It's sponsored by the U.S. Coast Guard Barracuda Station and Sector Humble Bay. And finally, many are aware of our marine outfall line, which was recently exposed. I want to let you know that's secure, and there'll be an update following just a bit here later in the meeting. This is just one last photo. This was our evening with Cal Poly Humboldt. We had some excellent talks from Assemblyman Mike Gibson, who you'll see on the left, of course, our Congressman Jared Huffman, center stage, and Dr. Tom Jackson of Cal Poly Humboldt. Ron?
Ryan, can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Are you seeing the slide with the three photos side by side?
I am.
Okay, great. All right, so development director report real quick. Be aware that on May 6th at the Warfinger building, there is a walk for MMIP Awareness Day, which is part of MMIP Awareness Month. And so the Yurok tribe has asked me to spread the word on this to all of our network. And so I've sent it to 400 some people by email and asking everyone that's seeing this here to spread the word. So the tribes encourage people to learn more about this topic and to attend this event. So it starts at 10 a.m. at the Warpinger building, and then there will be a walk at 11 from there to Old Town. The event ends at 3. And there are, I think, 7 flyers throughout Woodley Island about this. You can find those there. Nordic and the outfall permits are proceeding very well. And everything looks like it will be coming to a positive conclusion this early summer. And that is my full report for that.
All right. Thank you. Don't see a district treasurer here. Do we have a district council report?
Nothing for me tonight.
District engineer report?
Sure.
All right. Moving on to commissioner report. Commissioner Benson?
Nothing to report tonight.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Newman?
Yeah, a couple of interesting happenings in the commercial fishing business here in Humboldt Bay. Of course, the whole state of California found out just today that salmon season's once again going to be closed for 2024, which is a pretty dramatic effect up and down the coast. And beyond that, the Dungeness crab season that's still underway commercially and recreationally has been modified due to the possibility of whale entanglements. The areas south of the Mendocino-Sonoma County line are now closed for the rest of the season, even though the fishermen there were only allowed to use half their crab pots. And now the only area left open is north of the Mendocino-Sonoma County line, and it's been now restricted to where the fishermen have to move their pots inside of 180 feet or 30 fathoms. I'm still fishing commercially for crabs and probably will for a while since there's no salmon season. And the season may be able to proceed until its actual end at July 15th, or if there are perceived numbers of whales moving into the area that's still open, it may close. So we're dealing with quite a bit as commercial fishermen these days. And that's all I have tonight.
Thank you. That report. So, yeah, participated in the ports, what was it called? A confluence?
Roundtable.
Ports roundtable. Okay. Yeah. And it was very interesting. It was great to hear a lot of different perspectives in the room and also just meet with some colleagues from other ports. Like I was saying before in our break, our intermission, I went to the Humboldt Bay Symposium this morning, or this afternoon, I guess. It started at 1. It's going to be going on tomorrow as well and on Saturday, including some number of presentations on offshore wind, including from the Harbor District. So that should be exciting. Also met with members of the Core Hub and Surfrider this earlier this week, and feel like we had a very productive meeting. And I'm sure there are some other things going on, but I think we can move along. So I'll move on to unfinished business. Receive status update regarding the Humboldt Bay Offshore Wind Heavy Lift Marine Terminal Project.
Right, here we go. So this, I believe, is the fifth or sixth month in a row of a monthly update for this project. In no particular order, be aware that at our next board meeting, it's our intention to bring before the board a resolution regarding missing and murdered Indigenous peoples, and May is MMIP month. Be aware that on May 1st and 2nd, I will be attending a press conference, budget subcommittee, and other legislative actions in Sacramento for MMIP month. The Humboldt Bay Symposium is underway today, tomorrow, and Saturday. Chris will be presenting the offshore wind terminal project on Saturday. Delegation. So there will be a delegation of Norwegian offshore wind companies and Norwegian port companies in San Francisco next Monday, Tuesday. And Chris and I will be attending that and presenting on the 15th. The Pacific Offshore Wind Summit in Sacramento is on May 14th and 15th, and I'll be presenting on the 15th. If you recall, the last meeting I talked about a request for information about beneficial reuse of dredge materials. So just as a quick summary, recall that we issued out this memo here saying we were looking for information from anyone that could use any materials that we will be dredging as part of the wind project and any other dredging project in the bay in the coming 5 years. And so dredging consists of scooping or sucking mud and sand gravel off the bay bottom to make it deeper. And the Army Corps does this. The City of Eureka does it. Their marina, we do it at our marina. The wind project will do this. The material goes into a barge. And in most cases, those barges then go out into the ocean. The bottom of the barge opens up at a designated location and it dumps all the material in the ocean. There are arguably better places to put that material. It's called beneficial reuse. So if we can reuse that material on land, it is often better than dumping it in the ocean. So since at least 1 million cubic yards of materials typically move from the bay annually, and we're anticipating quite a bit more in the future due to a number of projects, we are exploring other ways to use the material, including beach replenishment, rather than dumping it in the ocean. So the request for information was for every agency out there that could possibly use this material. We sent this table, showed them how to fill it out, put some example projects on it, sent it to 400 plus people and said, please tell us how you could use this material. That our date of the request has gone by, and we got two responses. One from Caltrans that said, pretty good chance we could use that material someday, maybe, but we don't know how much or where. And the Humboldt County Resource Conservation District that said, could you take all of it down to Centerville Beach, dump it on the beach, and replenish the beach that is rapidly eroding? Number of other people said, hey, why don't you use it for sea level rise? That wasn't particularly useful. We need to know where to put it, what kind of material they need. So it opened a number of conversations. We're going to try again, but not a lot of great responses to that quite yet. So we've opened a conversation, but certainly haven't concluded one.
Rob, could you just speak to that a little bit more about like what some of our parameters are for being able to deliver it? Because isn't that the issue? It's not so much having it, it's where can you actually take it realistically?
No. So what the request for information said is, don't worry about how it gets there.
Okay.
Just tell us how much you want and what kind of material you want, and we'll figure out the rest later. And even that, people can't come up with how much they want or where they want to put it. So there's just not enough known about, you know, it's like, if we're going to raise berms, where exactly we're going to do it, who's responsible for them. No one so far has come up with a really specific project yet. But I think it is stimulating, you know, Caltrans is the one that took it the most seriously. They spent quite a bit of time and they said, you know, we need to, they have material engineers that are constantly sourcing gravel and sand. And now they realize like, hey, we could start thinking about that for future projects. So I'm not surprised about the responses we got. And I think it started conversations that needed to be started and it will lead to positive outcomes. But we've started a process.
In your conversations, is the idea of having to permit placing it, the process of going through permits to place it someplace, you think that might be causing some people hesitation to say that they would take it?
Yes. I mean, to be brutally honest, the regulatory agencies really want us to do beneficial reuse. And I have told them, you, the regulatory agencies, are the biggest hurdle to making this happen, right? Like you said, getting it to locations is difficult. But it is not cheap to put it on the barge over and over again, take it to the ocean and dump it, right? That's very expensive. So it could be cheaper to have pump stations every quarter of a mile for 4 or 5 miles and pump it somewhere. Could be cheaper that way than dumping it in the ocean. So the getting it to where it has to go is logistically difficult no matter where you take it, even if you take it to the ocean, because those barges can only hold so much. They have to go out, come back over and over again. It's very expensive. And getting the barge here, just the move and demove costs is incredibly expensive. Did that answer your question? I don't even remember what your question was. So,
in your opinion, if you talk that the permitting hassles were causing people to be hesitant to respond.
Yes.
It might be worthy to note that the district in 2020, let's just say 2020, did a beneficial reuse project, and we dredged somewhere around 11,000 cubic yards was what was available for dredge. We fell a little short on getting the total volume, but finding a place for the material because of the suitability of the material, especially what comes out of here, out of the Whidley Island, was very challenging. And the people that received the material after it sat for nearly a year had to come up with a certain mixing criteria in order to make it usable. And I think our net reuse was somewhere around 7,500 to 8,000 cubic yards. Trucking costs alone were over $20,000 just for final placement, not to mention the $1 million+ that it costs to do the dredging operation. And that was with local mobilization. We didn't have to bring a hopper dredge. We were able to reuse it. We were able to dewater it. It's $1 million to bring a hopper dredge in and out. So there are benefits to it, but those costs adds up very quickly. So today, you know, that 10,000, 7,500, 10,000 number is the success rate. So just a small example of, you know, some of the challenges that are out there. Yeah, we remain vigilant. Rob's going to get it done.
Yeah. Hey, one other thing to note, I do think we're going to get this done. And Nordic's really setting the standard. That one of the biggest challenges is long fin snelt mitigation. And so it'll be done for the first time in Humboldt Bay through the Nordic project. And so that's really going to open up an opportunity. One thing that's not a constraint that a lot of people think it could be or would be a constraint is environmental contamination, contaminated soil. If it's contaminated, it can't be dumped in the ocean and it can't be beneficially reused. So we're only talking about not contaminated material being beneficially reused. If it's contaminated, it either can't be dredged or it has to be taken to a special landfill. So keep your eye on our public notices on our website for more information about beneficial reuse.
Just to belabor the point a little bit more then, you mentioned for smelt, long fin smelt restoration, and just I bet you people would be interested to hear how dredge spoils could contribute to long fin smelt mitigation.
Well, it's unfortunately the opposite. So dredging.
Oh, we need that for dredging.
Yeah.
I see. So,
hydraulic dredging, right? Using a big straw and sucking it off the bottom also sucks up fish, and long fin smelt are endangered. And so to date, it has been nearly impossible to do hydraulic dredging because no one has done it. Impacted longfin smelt before. Now that the impact is being understood and the mitigation is being established, the precedent is set so that future projects could mitigate for longfin smelt.
I understand.
Okay. Feel free to interrupt me. I tried to make this graphic so that it's easier to explain. It's a little complex. So for our engineering for the overall project, remember this is the monthly update for the offshore wind heavy lift marine terminal project. We got a $10 million grant from the CEC. A portion of that was used to initiate a request for qualification process to hire engineering and permitting specialist firm. We used state procurement standards to issue that request for qualifications. Moffitt Nickel was selected competitively through that process from four proposals that we received. The plan was then to get a federal grant, PDIP federal grant, to continue that project because the original $10 million project, we were only able to use a small portion of that for the actual engineering contract. The remainder had to go to matching federal grants. So the plan was to then get a federal grant to finish off that project, amend that contract that was so competitively awarded to Moffitt Nickel, and then finalize the permitting and design. Unfortunately, we ran into a small road bump. So instead, here's what actually happened. We got the $10 million grants. We did an RFQ process. We used state procurement processes. We competitively selected Moffitt Nickel. We got the $8 million PDIP grant. Everything was going to plan. But then in talking to our federal granting agency, MARAD, they said, hey, you've got to use federal procurement standards. And the state procurement standards you originally used are not fully compliant with the federal procurement standards. So the document you just passed earlier in about procurement standards now update our standards so that we're in a good spot. Unfortunately, that would had to have been done way back here if we were to amend Moffitt Nickel's contract with this money. So because we have to start over with a new federal procurement process, we have to issue a new RFQ and do a new consultant contract. So, you know, this was before my time even. It was right when I started that the RFQ process was completed here. So it was, you know, 2.5 years ago. So it keeps us, you know, the same process. We just have to slow down a little bit in the middle here to do a new RFQ process. This could cause us a 3-month delay, though the RFQ that we just released last week, you know, kind of acknowledges this and drives the consultants to make up for that 3-month delay so we don't delay the project, but just be aware that's a possibility. So on our website, you can find this request for qualifications, and it is due on May 17th. So likely in the June meeting, it will come to you for award of a new contract for the final permitting and design project. Moffitt Nickel was competitively awarded the first one. I think it's safe to assume they're likely to bid on the next one, but there will likely be other bidders, and we're working as hard as we can to make this a fair process. So be aware that there will be a decision before you in June about this with recommendations.
Thanks for staying the course there, Rob.
Yeah.
We're government here to help.
Yeah.
My goodness.
I think that the new procurement standards are good. And we were really, you know, it was quite a bit of back and forth with MARAD, and they were like, oh, it just doesn't quite meet the standards. So we were really close. Some key meetings this past month. I'm not going to go through all of these. Just want to highlight this one here in the middle. That is the California Select Committee on Ports and Goods Movement, and the governor's office and others were here with us this past Friday. Was it before that? Time flies. Was it Friday somewhere? The California Select Committee of Ports and Goods Movement is a subcommittee of the California Assembly. And they have now toured every port in California one at a time, month after month, to understand what the ports need and what the port's relationship is to offshore wind. And so we had a nice research excursion on the Coral Sea. We spent some time in the Wharfinger, did a roundtable. It was a very productive series of conversations. A couple of tribal representatives present with us as well. We've been talking about establishing a community advisory committee. We're a little slow on that, but we're getting there. We ask for everyone's patience, and some more will be announced on that next month. We are evaluating a new process to select an operator, and we're targeting a process later this year. So we ask for people's patience on that one as well. And then upcoming public meetings, we're targeting general public meeting in a neighborhood specific meeting in Samoa or Manila, and maybe other public events targeting May or June. We're kind of in a boring lull portion of the project. It's largely structural engineering and calculations. There's not a lot to share that would be of great interest to the public, but starting in May or June, we'll have, I think, some new useful content to get public feedback. And I think I just answered this question. Why not more public meetings? If we could theoretically hold, you know, well, these are public meetings every month. But I think if we held, you know, big elaborate public meetings at the Wharfinger, it would start to get redundant. There's not a lot of new content to share. But we do want to do a lot more public engagement starting in May and June. And we are doing quite a bit of individual stakeholder engagement throughout the past 6-12 months. I think in conclusion, the May 9th board meeting will be held at the Wharfinger. An announcement of that Wharfinger venue is imminent. So sometime in the coming weeks, that'll be announced. But I guess we're announcing it right now. And that is at least in part because the MMIP resolution, we've invited a number of our friends with various tribes to join us, and we think that it may exceed the number of chairs in this room. So just to be safe, we're holding it there to make sure there's room for everyone that wants to participate.
Thanks, Rob.
Any questions or comments from the board?
That's a lot of meetings, Rob. Good job.
Good work. I went to them too. Oh,
okay. Thank you, Chris. And I don't think you mentioned about the trip, so that a number of people from the county are going on to the East Coast coming up the end of this month.
Leaving on April 24th.
Leaving on April 24th, including Director Mickelson, Commissioner Benson, and myself.
And Mindy Hiley.
And Mindy. Oh, Mindy's going as well. Mm-hmm. And a number of people from the county. And I think it's a very whirlwind trip. We're going to look at some wind ports and training facilities and manufacturing facilities on the East Coast.
Yes, we're not sleeping.
Yes.
Only on the airplane.
Putting everybody on a bus also, yeah. But
I'd like to comment on that. Yeah, you know, since I'm going, I met with the PCC and just asked folks for what kinds of questions they might have and what folks might want me to be focusing on. And the input that I've gotten has really been all of it. You know, the supply chain, the manufacture, the construction, the operations and maintenance, and then what to do with what the recycle, repurpose, reuse of some of these materials at the end of their lifespan. So there's just, you know, we're going to get exposed to a lot, ask a lot of questions, and I'll be asking questions about all those things.
One thing I can point out, so I've been to the site that you will all be visiting. Just realize that our project is eight times larger than what you'll see. So the New Bedford project is relatively small compared to ours.
Good to know. Eight times.
And is that because of the difference since they're doing like monopile fixed bottom and we're doing floating,
yeah,
tow it out?
So their project is effectively just the staging part of ours. Ours is staging and integration. They do integration in the ocean. So you'll also be visiting the ocean in your visits. But what you see in the ocean, we will be doing on land.
No, thank you. All right, nothing else from the board. Anyone from the audience care to comment on this item?
What is the trip that you're going on? Can you specify? You just said you guys are going to the East Coast.
Usually we take comments at the podium in order. I think someone was waiting to make a comment, but you can fight it out amongst yourself who gets to go first.
Is there a timer?
Are you planning on going over 3 minutes?
No.
Okay. Then we'll trust you.
My name is Alicia Bixler, and I live in Arcata. And I would like to make comments regarding the operator selection process and the potential new RFQ process that would go along with it. When you all start this process, I just would request that it's widely publicized with email updates and timeline updates. Also, when you whittle down kind of your main operators that you are thinking about, it would be interesting to get a presentation from them to the community so we can know who they are and what their values are, you know, how they're planning on working with the community, how they're planning on working with fisheries, how they're interested in addressing MMIP, that kind of thing. Also, on your last RFQ, when you're talking for the permitting process, you mentioned forming an evaluation committee that would help guide how you make decisions, which I think is great. And maybe that's the same thing as the community advisory committee. I'm not sure. There's a lot of committees that we're talking about. I think it'd be great for Peninsula residents to be a part of these committees. You could ask the Peninsula Community Collaborative to nominate a representative. You could have a representative from Manila, Fairhaven, and Samoa, or representatives from just Samoa, since they'll be most impacted. And, you know, I know that you all are going to be the final entity that decides who the operator is going to be. And I certainly do not speak for tribes, and I know that you're in direct consultation with tribes, but I personally believe that the tribes that can claim ancestral territory to this land should be the final decision makers. I think they should have decision-making authority as to who the operator should be. To me, this is just an important step in achieving environmental justice. And, you know, as we said, this is a great way to, you know, do business differently and, you know, change things up with the way things have traditionally been done. That's all I have. I guess I just wanted to say that I hope you take these comments in good faith. You know, I and Core Hub, you know, we really care about making this project be as successful as possible with as much community support as possible. And I have just a lot of gratitude for you all and a lot of respect for you all. I know that you are listening to us and you take our comments seriously. So thank you.
Thank you. Next.
Hi, Wendy again. And sorry for my informalities. My question was, what is the conference you guys are going to on the East Coast? It sounds like the purpose is well laid out, which I, you know, definitely condone. However, it is good to know the names of these things, and I also don't know what the acronym for MIP is as well. If you would explain that.
Yeah, the conference, we don't usually do back and forth in community comment, but I'm happy to answer your question. It's, the conference is something that the county is putting together and funding. I'm not completely clear on exactly the whole history of it, but they're inviting a number of different entities from around the county involved in the development and the workforce of offshore wind. And MMIP is Missing, Murdered, and Indigenous Peoples, which has been a subject that we've been educated about significantly from our area tribes.
And we'll be going to New Bedford, Massachusetts, and then going out to Nantucket Island and then seeing some offshore wind off of Nantucket.
Hi there. My name's Colleen Clifford. I'm from Manila. I work with the PCC, the Peninsula Community Collaborative, and I've also worked with Core Hub on these community benefit agreements. And just in regards to your recent RFQ for the permitting and 30% design, we're really excited to see inclusion of various stakeholders, including community members, environmental justice groups, among a lot of others. So we appreciate the inclusion and the need for engagement between the permitting group. And we also wonder if that can lead to the community steering committee with some authority to make decisions. Of course, as Alicia mentioned, the tribal authority would be also very important in that, as well as a science and adaptive management committee. That's been a part of our community benefits discussions. So we'd like to see that kind of throughout all of these requests, we'd love to see those kinds of things laid out for the people that will be exploring these opportunities. And, you know, having to go back over work never feels great, but it is giving us another opportunity to look at these things with the perspectives coming at you that have been part of the process from, you know, from joining in here and there as everybody's getting wind of this opportunity. So thank you for everything. We, as Alicia mentioned, we are grateful that you guys are listening, and the inclusion of MMIP resolution is awesome. Maybe that could be a part of these RFQs, using the UREC tribe has some good standards and practices to discuss that, to put that into these kinds of written agreements, written proposals. So thanks for listening.
Yeah. Anyone else care to comment on this item?
Carrie Venegas, resident pain in the biscuits occasionally, Changing Tides Family Service Executive Director and member of Core Hub. So first of all, I just want to say I've missed a few meetings because I really intended to come and give you a lot of props for the things that have actually gone into some of the documents you've produced. So a big thank you for including lots of the things that we actually share with you as priorities, including I always want to unpack that acronym, tribal priorities, including missing and murdered Indigenous people. And then also the careful attention that you all put in, just to let you know that things do get read. I believe it's page 7, or item 7. Let me just get that right, because I want you to know page 7 in the RFQ process with the substantial inclusion of community-based organizations and input. Thank you. That thing, we do read things. Things are definitely appreciated. And then also on page 10, where I think that it's also really highlighted the community benefits plan, examining, investigating. Really want to thank you for that. And also, again, to say I'm really sorry about the Crawley thing not working out for the current thing and having to start over again. I know a lot of work went into that, and we really appreciate the work that went into that. And now we're looking forward to this next process and really to ask the inclusion of a lot of these priorities again. And can we have some discussion of community agreements? And to echo what people had already said up here too, it would be fabulous to have community representation in your selection process at your discretion, whatever might work, especially Peninsula and Manila residents and tribal representation in helping to make the decision that you will ultimately make. And then also, it would be great to see that presentation to have the people who are maybe submitting to you for things present to the community, because at the end of the day, it's their work that's going to actually make an impact. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Any further comment on this item? All right. It was an information only item. So I believe we can move on. Thank you very much, Rob and Chris. Item 10B, receive status update regarding the district-owned marine outfall line.
Okay, so as we previously reported at our last meeting, due to extreme beach erosion, and I guess with the lights in here, we can't quite see that, but this edge to dune here is... based on these bumps, 17 to 21 feet. So just an extreme amount of erosion that occurred. Is somebody else clicking a mouse?
Oh, she's not sharing yet.
Okay.
Can we turn these on? Too much? No.
Thank you. So again, due to the extreme beach erosion that occurred this year, which is really extraordinary, we lost a great deal of our beach out at Samoa. Many of you have heard about the famous T parking lot where a lot of us have recreated over the years, which is no longer. It's mostly fallen into the beach. But no different, if you follow this little red circle here, is our marine outfall line. It daylighted up onto the beach surface and actually it got an area where it floated. So it came up out of the surf and caused us to have to apply for emergency coastal development permit so we could do a temporary repair while we look at a more permanent solution. Through strong surf and debris, we got a little bit of battering. We had a large area of this stave, which is the wood that you saw in the previous photo, or if you can see here, that's come off of this. And this is a good example as to what happened out on that beach this year. So recently we began the process of getting that outfall line back in the earth. So we got out to an emergency contract bid and had a local contractor who was able to come in and perform on this. So we had to excavate land on either side of the pipe a little heavier on one side to get it back into position, get it back down into the earth. And sorry, I missed one of my things there. So we had a total of 99 four-ton bags of quarry rock, which were staged to anchor and armor the marine outfall line. 198,000 pounds of rock. So here you can see the marine outfall line before the bag is placed on it. These are polyester bags with a quarry rock in them. It's quite a process to get that moving. This is a little bit of a progress as the bags are stacked. So you can see the methodology here. While this marine outfall line goes 1 mile and a half out into the Pacific Ocean, so it's a much smaller section, of course, that was exposed. And our district engineer, SHN, Mike Fogut, who's present tonight, and his representative, Chuck Swanson, did all the work on this, along with Walling Construction. So here's a little bit of what's going on. I just want to note the conditions that these people worked in to get the job done for us. But we're very happy to say that our outfall line is now complete. We've reported of the completion of our temporary repairs to the California Coastal Commission today. We'll follow back with our design as to what we did and work on a more permanent repair and a permitting process forward. But just want to give a shout out to SHN and Wallen to work quite diligently on this.
Great, thank you. Any questions from the board?
Yeah, Chris, what would have happened if we had done nothing? Like, what's the next steps in degradation of a pipe outfall like that gets daylighted?
Sure. Well, I could turn this over to Mike. There's a lot of issues that could happen. I mean, keep in mind,
it's not good news.
This marine outfall line is active. It currently sources the affluent for the Peninsula Community Services District. Mm-hmm. And while it certainly isn't operating at capacity right now because they don't have that sort of volume, there are times in the future where this will have a very large capacity in it. The good news is when the pipe was extended, a HDPE, high-density polyethylene, if I'm saying that correctly, liner was placed within the pipe. And so for that reason, we didn't have necessarily imminent danger, but there was a section of the pipe that was partially exposed. There was a vent or a riser? Are we certain quite what it was? Yeah, there was some old infrastructure that was in place that was no longer in use because, as Mike just stated, the liner went past that. But we removed that and, of course, had to patch a small section in there. If we hadn't anchored this pipe down, it's very likely that the pipe could have separated or imminent damage could have occurred. There's a flange south of there. That it's in place. It's in the old section of a pipe, which is concrete encased, but the liner still goes through there. Imagine the amount of recreation that occurs. Our first order of action was to completely close off the beach to a degree we were allowed to. Vehicular traffic is what I'm speaking to, not pedestrian. But there are a lot of people that drive out on that beach, and the loss would have been great to the infrastructure, but imagine the damage that would have happened to a vehicle or the persons in that vehicle. So we're grateful. California Coastal Commission, Melissa Kramer, was on it like that. Rob and I called her on a Friday afternoon, and we were engaged in permitting by Tuesday. And it's been pretty remarkable, the challenge. Same with the County of Humboldt. We had to get an encroachment permit so we could stage roadside. And, the cooperation was there. So we're very, very grateful.
When's the last time, if ever, the pipe's been exposed to that extent?
So each and every year, we have quite a bit of degradation that happens on our beach. It's for those of you that are beachgoers, you probably know. We lose a lot of our beach in the winter, but nothing like this. So in a typical winter, we'll see the top of the pipe. Oh, it's not up. You don't have to bring it up, Amber. No problem. But you know, you've got a cylinder, right? Down in the earth. So this upper half, the convex portion, often comes out, and we can see the wood stave and the bands that held it around there. Not uncommon. We would get reports periodically. Of course, we're going out there and seeing it. I would say each winter we see a portion of it. But I don't have an exact measurement on it. This is a 42-inch outer diameter pipe, and the entire 42 inches was exposed. I would think typically if we looked at the top of that connection or the top of the pipe, we picked the plane down on the ground, we took that measurement, maybe, you know, 8 to 18 inches, 16 inches, something like that, but not to this degree.
Mike, it had actually, it's buoyant, so it had a bow and it came up. So it's like that, get it back into the gravity flow.
And I'm sure if there had been any actual rupture or breakage of the pipe, we'd be looking at a much bigger project at this point. Plus shutting down this peninsula wastewater treatment, I guess.
Well, it's an incredible asset. You know, have a permitted outfall. California coast.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have that asset.
Good work. Nothing else from the board? Any comments from the public on this item? All right. Bringing it back. I did, just in my idling, looking at social media, I did notice it attracted a lot of attention from the public. What is this big pipe in the beach? And a lot of interesting theories as to what it might have been.
We were one of the key articles today on Las Cosas Outpost. So.
Yeah, it's good.
Definitely. And there's
actually go get the information.
Yeah, there is a good comment in there from Troy, too, which explains kind of what occurred this year weather-wise. Troy Nicolini from National Weather Service. And how quickly the beach will build itself back now that we're in a northern wind pattern. So.
All right, thank you. Moving on to new business. Item A, budget goals for Woodley Island Marina, Fields Landing Boatyard, and dredging. Don't go now, though, because we're going to be talking about our travel reimbursement guidelines later.
No, I'll leave the budget to you. Thank you so much for having us.
Am I good to go, Amber? The slide's good right where we're at. That's awesome. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to look at budget goals for dredging, Woodley Island Marina, and the Fields Landing Boatyard. Okay, not to worry.
Once again, appreciation for the way that we're doing these budgets in a chunk, step by step, including the goals of why we're allocating funds to these things. So I think it's really helpful. So the wooden staves that were around that, how old were those wooden staves? Those were original wooden staves around that? Wow.
They're pretty much all. Okay.
Can I ask what that thing was?
It's a marine outfall line that takes a affluent out to the Pacific Ocean.
Originally for the fall.
Okay, so for our capital projects for 2024-25, so keep in mind when we budget, there are items that are ordinary expenses that we adjust annually based on need, if there's additional basic operations and maintenance that'll occur, or if there's large expense increases due to CPI, or if we have a particular category in which we've completed a repair. These are the actual capital items. So as everyone is well aware, we are going to have a continuation of last year's dredging episode. and our maximum budget for that is $2 million. That is a continuation of the monies before last year, and we will pick up at DDOC and work our way through the marina. Dock improvements include such things such as weldments, rub boards, rollers, whalers. Those are all components on docks, including the through bolts, $15,000. Because of the age of our docks, we're going through and doing somewhat of an upgrade and doing our best to keep them serviceable so we do not have to forego any of our slips. Embarcadero and parking improvements. So the Embarcadero, of course, is the runway out there that you see that's up above the riprap or the water. It's the part that we all enjoy. And then in our parking areas, and this year, most of that's a little bit of ceiling and striping and some areas of taking out high spots or potholes. Interior painting is in the main building. These are related to our tenancy and occupancy here in the building. Roof repairs of approximately $50,000. And then security cameras. We began a security camera replacement project last year and did the heads of the docks. And so we're going to work on the other areas this year. Marina lighting, $10,000. That is actually our portion of a potential rebate program that we've been kind of in line for and had a bit of a challenge with our various vendors closing that gap. But through the help of a gentleman, Mike, over at RCEA, it looks like we're closing in on this year. Some of the people that he had working on us have been very persistent on our behalf. We're doing a restroom refresh. This is carryover from last year. We were unable to do it. $12,000, and that's so our buildings that are on either end of the marina are brought up to a fresh, clean standard. And then picking up where we started off a year ago on tree planting. We're replacing a lot of trees here on Lily Island. We had to remove several due to storm damage and rot. And we made a commitment to our community and to the tenants that live here at Woodley Island that we'd be replacing those. Finally, we're allocating $25,000 for some grant projects matching funds. These will be for things that we apply for funds directly here at Woodley Island Marina. This could, and while we have some projects identified, we have to wait for the funding opportunities to come out. But these would be things that would include recreation, harbor safety, and improvements to our work dock here at Woodley Island. So $2,109,500, remember $2 million of that is for dredging. Deferrals, there are other areas that we want to do a roof replacement on, but we can't get to it all at once. There are some carpentry projects where we want to do some repairs and replacement, but we had to shore areas up for the time being. We've been looking at an entrance gate and an access control system for when you first come onto the island that would close at a certain time each night to provide a little better level of security here on the island. And so those will be deferred till next year, or if there's monies that we find this year, those are our preliminary deferrals. For the Fields Landing Boatyard or Shipyard, as our tenant refers to it, the capital improvement projects down there, our travel lift is in need of straps. It's about $20,000, but there are other materials, and there's going to be significant freight to get those items here. If we're not able to secure everything, we could do those in part and do a series over years, but we're going to try to replace the entire strap system this year. The stormwater treatment system, this is a carryover from last year. We began the design process. The board gave us authorization to proceed with the design, so that's underway with our district engineer. And but we'll be spending the rest of that money this year to put that into action. Sweeping and control equipment. We've had some exceedance issues at this particular facility with the metals when we sample our stormwater. And the good news is some of the items that we've been able to put in place, the control items, our levels have come down quite significantly. So we're happy to report that. So we want to continue to invest in better BMT materials than the BMPs we've been purchasing in the past. Tarmac improvements, we have an area of lift that is near our travel lift, which it passes over. And you might imagine a speed bump, so to speak, when you're carrying a multi-ton boat. Our travel lift carries up to 150 tons. Pretty significant. It's not a little bump. So we're going to be doing a grinding project there and possibly having to install a bit of concrete. We have general building repairs of $5,000. That's to keep our facilities down there in good working order. And replacing some of the tires on our travel lift. Unfortunately, with the straps popping up, we won't be able to do all of the tires as we had planned this year, but we're going to start on that. Not all of them are the same age. Vessel demo is something that will be deferred. We always end up with boats at the boatyard. They're either abandoned vessels or vessels that we cooperatively pull off the water and funds don't work out. So we've made a lot of progress on this area. Tarmac sealing, there's a large area that's starting to degrade, and we're going to have to get it sealed soon, but it's not going to be something that we're going to be able to pull off this year. Continue our exterior lighting project that we began down there, and then there's those travel lift tires, so about $70,000 in deferrals. So that's our report for this time. We'll be going over other properties, Revenue Terminal 1 and 2, Shelter Cove, and some of our ancillary properties to come. So this is an information item. The board can provide direction and interact on this as we go through this process. This will come back again in the May board meeting, the June board meeting, and then final adoption.
So, any questions or comments from the board?
Looks good.
In terms of the exterior lighting, both here and Fields Landing, do we have policies on the type of lighting, and is it like shaded to minimize?
Yeah, we do lighting studies, and we have to be very cautious about what we use. Most of the level of our lighting is the lower lumens, and we also try to use amber light versus a white light. Well, white light gives off a lot more because of the nature that's here, and also we have residents. We use lower Kelvins in our lamps, which is the color, of course, in our lamps. We're also only using LED fixtures from this point forward, so everything we replace is a direct exchange. We also buy items that are made of a nature that typically are built here in the U.S. For serviceability, because we are in a Buy America, Build America, might have those backwards program. The other part of that is we want serviceability. A lot of the import product, unfortunately, is constantly changing either the chassis or other components of them. And you might imagine in a marine environment, things don't last long for us. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Probably too much information, but.
I'm fascinated with lighting, so.
Yeah.
All right, anything from the public on this item? Seeing none, again, this was an informational item, so we can move on to item 11B, review and adopt travel reimbursement guidelines. All right, I did do public comment and there wasn't.
Okay. So review and adopt travel reimbursement guidelines. This one's going to knock your socks off. So staff, whoops, hold on. Staff recommends the board adopt Cal HR 2203 allowances and travel reimbursements for all Harbor District travel. I think the point to note is that with the projects that we're working on, the scale of what we're working on, travel is essential, and we are gone on a recurring basis. I have not been lucky. I haven't done a lot of travel, and now I probably won't be here for the next 6 weeks very much. Rob suffers through this frequently himself. Commissioners, you're traveling for us, and so it's important because we are spending the public's money that we adopt policies that are in keeping with the reimbursement guidelines that are approved not only by the state but also by our federal partners. And so these are the things that will bring us into compliance, and we want to make sure that we adopt those and stay within those parameters. We will need a vote on this one.
Yeah. Is this making any changes? Oh, I'm sorry. Any questions or statements from the board?
Not yet. Go ahead.
Is this making any changes of significance to our current policies on travel?
It's bringing us more into the items that are consistent with what our funding agencies allow versus what's in the district policy. So if we want to be reimbursed, that's what we need to follow. If we were to exceed these, those are additional expense borne by the district.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're funding our own travel at the district, we want to keep consistent in this guideline. It's also something that will be picked up in our audits when an examination is done. So number one, it's to become consistent with all of our government partners out there. And number two, it's to be consistent within the organization.
Great. Anything from the public on our travel reimbursement guidelines?
You really need a question option because I like to learn more as you're going. So this actually is an exciting thing to me because this is really important to grant stuff. What are you currently using? And I don't know if you can answer this because this is public comment time, but what were your current guidelines?
Sure. Happy to answer. Absolutely. So our current personnel policy has guidelines surrounding that. And in essence, we've adopted IRS guidelines.
So the federal ones.
Correct. And then we go geographically. And so we've made allowances oftentimes. Those of us that travel probably know a hotel in San Francisco could be $300-$400. And so we've got to rein this in because of the amount of travel we're doing. There are times where it makes sense to allow a greater expense because somebody can stay there. We're not paying for Ubers or parking fees and that sort of thing. But yeah, this is adopting something that's just more consistent with what our other sister agencies might be using.
So moving from the federal to the state guidelines.
Correct.
Thank you.
Well, there'll be a combination of both because we have both grants.
At discretion.
We have to adopt a base document, but then work within those grant guidelines. So, yep.
Thank you.
Carrie, I'll teach you a little, give you a quick tip. If you have a question and it's not appropriate because it's public comment, just look at one of the board members, ask your question, and we can ask the questions.
Got it.
Well, I thought about raising my hand.
But I'm sure that was important. All right. Well, great. Yeah, thank you for the question. There's nothing else. I'll bring it back to the board for a vote.
I'll move we adopt the 2023 allowances and travel reimbursement guidelines.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed or abstaining? Hearing none, motion passes. It looks like we're at the end of our agenda items, and I see a few future agenda items here.
Gotta get my screen back, sorry.
And I can read them off here too. A resolution supporting missing and murdered Indigenous persons. District Baywide piling removal concept. That sounds exciting. An Army Corps of Engineer nearshore placement update.
Got it. Thank you.
Is it going to be coming back to the board at some point that the RCEA res BCT rate?
The board gave staff authorization just to go ahead and proceed with that.
Oh, okay.
And we've reached out to staff at RCEA, and I believe that's in play.
Great.
There's been communication from PG&E actually on that matter just this week.
All right.
Yep.
A question on future agenda items. Probably when we come back from New Bedford and Nantucket, I'll probably want to give a more robust commissioner report. And I don't know if that should be agendized or whether we can just do it.
You could do it in your commission report. Absolutely. And we'll work with you to get slides or anything you want to do. Okay. We can help with that.
Sounds good. Yeah. I just want to report back to the public what we learned.
Yeah. All right. If there is nothing else, then we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming out and spending your Thursday evening with us.
Yeah. Army Corps of Engineers.